Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 46 of the Defend Your Ground podcast. This is Ben, the executive director of Blue Ribbon Coalition. I'm here today with Simone, our policy director. And Simone, we are here today to talk about the Grandview Travel Management Plan in Idaho. It's one of many things that we're engaged on right now. There's a lot going on, but this is the one with the soonest deadline. So we've already been out connecting with the groups in this area. I've been out to the area. We've had an action alert out for a few weeks on this, and we also, there's been an extension granted. And so we will be having until April 15th to submit comments to the BLM about this plan. This is an important one to get comments in because there are a lot of things, a lot of problems with this plan. So Simone, why don't you give us kind of the basic rundown of what's going on in this plan, what we're looking at, and then we can talk about what people need to do.
So this is in the Owyhee region of Idaho. So it's the southwestern corner. This is the fifth travel plan that the BLM has put out in this area. So we've been doing a lot of work in southwest Idaho. The BLM has been trying to get these travel management plans done. And this is the fifth one. And they are looking at 1,365 miles of routes is what they're claiming. But Ben, you've actually been on the ground in this area. Do you think that's accurate? That's what I'm curious. Like, is that a accurate base?
No, there's not at all. There are definitely a lot of missing routes. What we understand is when they did the scoping for this, this was back in 2012. And then this has been going through some form of deliberation or planning process since then. It got pulled in 2015. And then now it's rearing its head again as a draft EA. And so that's one of our initial concerns right out of the gate, is the number of inventoried miles seems to be low compared to what's on the ground. They haven't done a scoping report on this area for at least 12 years. And so the information they're relying on is pretty outdated. And so the community is pretty fired up because I've looked at these maps. They notice a lot's missing. First concern. But so why don't you tell them about the alternatives? Because that's where this goes from being a problematic plan to something that's pretty alarming.
Yeah. And I did want to point out that the majority of this area, I mean, this is single track routes for the most part. I mean, this is where people go to ride single track, and this is where they host desert racing in southern Idaho. So really important to the motorcycle community, to the desert racing community. This is where the entirety of those desert races happen. I mean, I guess they go a little bit onto some private property from what I understand. But for the most part, if you implement any of these alternatives, it's going to shut down desert racing. So whether you desert race in Idaho or anywhere else, I mean, you can imagine if some of your favorite desert racing is closed and restricted just because of a travel management plan and because they didn't inventory routes correctly and whatnot. So So with the alternatives, we've got alternative D, that 554 miles of routes will be closed, and then 587 miles of routes will be closed for the motorcycle races, so for the desert races.
And that's the best one.
Yes, and it's still closing, you know, more than a third of the routes. Alternative B is definitely the most restrictive. Let me pull up the exact amount it is. So alternative B will keep open only 223 miles of routes. And of that, they're saying only 98 is going to be single track. So authorized use only, they're going to keep open 127 miles. Alternative C, there's only going to be 360 miles of routes open. Alternative D is only going to keep open 377 miles of routes. And then they also have like single track that's open separately. So that's also another aspect to this plan that's kind of confusing, is they've got designated as open routes, and then they've got designated just single track routes. Ben, because you've been on the ground, how accurate do you think it is that, for example, Alternative D keeps open 377 miles of just like open routes to everybody? Do you think there's that much, or is it mainly just single track?
Well, I mean, like any travel plan, I mean, it does have some main roads going through it. That is probably where you get most of that mileage of the multiple use. So there's some pretty substantial county roads that go through there. But where you get the most of the mileage is the single track. And it is, and every group is using this, and they are using this to get into the Owyhees. And I mean, we saw a comment come through today from some of the more 4x4 users, and they have groups that go and do rides on some of the trails in this area. The dirt bike racing and the dirt bikers are the crowd that seem to be the most fired up about this one, because it really is closing a lot of their race routes. And as far as the alternatives go on this one, Simone, we can't make heads or tails of them because of how they've been presented, how they're being mapped. And that's part of the reason why we asked for an extension, is because it's hard to really even analyze this as like, this alternative meets this criteria better than this one. I mean, if anything, if I had to pick an alternative, I'd pick alternative A. And that's the one that usually everyone's like saying, well, why don't you pick alternative A and support that? And that's generally, we do support alternative A. We want to leave everything open that's currently there. The problem in this case is alternative A still misses a lot of uninventoried routes.
Because alternative A, if theoretically they chose alternative A, that only keep open 1,365 miles of routes, which, so then lots would be closed just by default.
Yeah. And so on this one, I can't say there's like a single alternative that I'm willing to say, here's what we support as far as alternatives go. And this office has generally been good on these Owyhee plans. Like when there's routes in the alternatives or things that we want them to include, they've been open-minded about including them, but usually we're talking about like a handful of routes. On this one, what you have, if I was to describe this landscape, is it's very much a desert. It's like sagebrush and like a sagebrush ecosystem. And the soil is really sandy in some regards. It's loose soil. It's not rocky, hard, compact soil. And so you get monsoon storms in the summer, and they come and wash, go down into these drainages. And at the bottom of every drainage is basically like this sandy wash. It's about 1 to 2 feet wide in any given place. And so they just, the landscape itself is creating this really awesome network of single track trails that people have been dirt biking up and down the washes. I mean, they've been dirt biking up and down these washes for decades. And what happens is the storms wash them out. So any sort of impacts that are coming from the use of the wash are getting erased every time there's a significant rainfall. And there isn't any erosion or soil impacts or anything that's happening in these wash bottoms that isn't getting completely replicated through a rainstorm or something. And you have, and so that's the, so the user, it really functions almost like an open OHV area in that sense, and has been throughout its history. Doesn't mean everybody's going everywhere they want here, but they are, people have kind of just used these washes as if they are trails, and it's created a really great destination for dirt bike use and for dirt bike racing. And so the groups there will go create race courses. And each year it's a different race course because they cycle through the different trails based on the trail condition so that they're never causing too much impact to any single area or trail. And the users do that voluntarily just because it makes the most sense. And so if you go and close a bunch of routes in this area, what you're doing is disrupting what is a natural cyclical use that's happening among the users just because that's how they want to use the area. And it'll, we hear people talk about, well, if you close everything, you're going to concentrate all the impacts into one area. And that's never, is that more true than what I've seen in this plan. This is an area where a more prolific route network will actually lessen any environmental impact you could possibly imagine. And so that's, that was kind of a long answer to your question, but it's an interesting, very different kind of an off-roading area or motorized recreation area compared to like Moab or other areas that we've been involved in. It has a very unique landscape and topography. It's lending itself to a really cool, fun, productive form of outdoor recreation. This plan's going to like cut that in the throat as far as.
Well, and what's cool about this area too, from what I understand, is all of the washes, all of the routes, you know, they kind of circle back around. You can meet up and on the map and with talking to people up there, they say you can tell, you know, whoever's created these maps, they haven't actually been to the area because they have most of the trails they go off and they stop as if there's a destination. And they say everything loops around and connects to another trail. And so it's really fun. Single track is what it sounds like. And that's not on the maps. They go out and then they stop. And so they're losing a lot of inventory with that. What about dispersed camping? Is there dispersed camping in this area?
I asked about that and there is some, and they said there's a few areas where people will come in and camp. I mean, I took one picture of one spot, but my take is it's not a huge dispersed camping destination. I didn't get into the whole area, but the areas where I was, which is where the dirt bike racing happens, I didn't see a lot of evidence of that. I think people use these routes to get into the higher country of the Owyhees, and that's probably where more of the camping happens. And so it really is kind of like we're in a plan like this. They're saying we're trying to balance the management for different user groups. We posted something about this, and again, the idiots came out of the woodwork of, oh, why don't you go walk? I can assure you that nobody's going and like walking through this area.
I've asked, have you ever seen hikers? And they're like, this isn't a hiking destination. Like really the only user group that's out there. I mean, 99% of the users are single track riders.
Dirt bikes. Yeah. And like the soil, I was like, oh, well, could you build mountain bike stuff here? And it's like, the soil's not great. Like you don't want a mountain bike in soil that's that loose. If I was to be the BLM manager in charge of this area, I would look at it and basically say, we're going to manage this more like Sand Hollow in Utah, where it's seen as kind of an open OHV recreation area, promote the economic impacts that come from that. The user groups are already actually pretty responsible in like managing a permit system for the races. And so every route on these maps, and some that are missing, have been analyzed as part of a race at some point. And the race organizers have like records of these maps going back decades. And so every route has been analyzed and approved and signed off on by the BLM for use for every environmental impact. That like when you get this permit for the race, they analyze the environmental impacts. And that's why there is some seasonality to this, because there is habitat that is like sage grouse habitat in as part, like some of this plan, certain elevation levels in this plan could have sage grouse in them. And so that's why they have adjusted the seasonality of their events around sage grouse breeding seasons. I mean, there's ways to manage for that. And these trails have all been analyzed for those impacts. And so I think everyone was kind of caught by surprise and off guard when they saw that even the most open access alternative was so restrictive, because there's already been a pretty extensive history of these routes being analyzed for these uses by the BLM and being okay.
Well, and that's what I think the perception is, because the alternatives are so restrictive currently as they are. I mean, it will get rid of the desert racing. And so the perception is that the BLM is doing this to refuse the permits for the desert races moving forward.
Yeah, and that's possible. I think it'll be very hard to, I mean, it'll definitely lower the quality of that experience. And then the route system does, I think, would be a lot more difficult to run these races. And it they'd be restricted to a few of the same trails every year, instead of being able to go create a new course every year that challenges riders in different ways and provides a diverse and higher quality recreation experience. That's something that BLM doesn't always have a good framework for analysis for, is to analyze why is one experience qualitatively higher than another. And those are all arguments that these groups are ready to make. The problem is when we go into the commenting platforms and the BLM's analysis and the interactive maps, you'll go click on a route that's closed, proposed closed. And what it'll do is it'll highlight like 19 routes that are part of like a route cluster. And sometimes those will be connected. Sometimes it'll be like five different routes that are in completely separate areas, and they'll be calling that route the same route ID. And that's where you start to get into like the fatal flaws of this plan, is we don't have any route specific analysis for a single route in the whole plan. That is not how we traditionally see travel management planning being done by other offices. I mean, the San Rafael Swell, for instance, we have route reports that have been released to the public on routes they're analyzing there. That document's like 9,000 pages long because they're covering 5, 6, 7 pages for each route. And it's formulaic. I mean, they're looking at a certain list of questions of, is this route affecting grazing? Does this route access recreation amenities? Does this route have these soils and this vegetation and these species?
The BLM is required to analyze and look at all the effects.
And so they are. So the way you read this travel plan is like, well, they have a big section about soils and say, we care about soils and these soils are affected by the plan. And it's really broad statements, but no route specific analysis. And so it really makes it almost impossible for the public to provide as effective of input as we can. And so we're going to be sharing this with the BLM. The local groups in the area have got the congressional delegation engaged in a productive way. And I think when people start to see some of the deficiencies in this plan, it's going to be a hard case to make that they should even go through to complete it as is. I think they should step back from this one, back up in the process, bring in the groups, get an actual legitimate inventory of what's there, possibly think about a resource management plan amendment prior to this and designating certain portions of this as an open OHV area, because that's really how it's being managed anyway right now. And so if you go look through the plan to say, well, it's being managed that way, but are there significant environmental impacts that would prevent the justification from continuing to manage that way? And I don't see any like major red flags of what the environmental or other management concerns are in this area, to where this isn't like every weekend there's a race there. They have a racing season in the spring. In the summer, it's really too hot to ride. A lot of people aren't spending much time out there.
Yeah, only a few races.
And you'll have racers kind of go practice and go train and ride around out there and go explore around.
Recreationally, you know, they've done it for generations. This is where they've gone. I've heard countless stories of people saying, you know, this is where I grew up. This is where I learned to ride a motorcycle. This was our escape on the weekends. So it's just a lot of, you know, recreational families going out for.
Yeah, it's just locals. It's not a lot of destination for people coming from all over. Other than for the races, you know, and I was there on a weekend that they were having a race. So during the racing season on a Friday afternoon, we didn't see a single person out there. And so even during the busy season, it's not like there's a lot of heavy use, which leads me to another huge deficiency in this plan. The BLM is required by NEPA to analyze the social and economic impacts of their plan. There is not a mention of that anywhere in the plan. Usually they have some sort of economic impact study. There's a software program they use called M-Plan, where they actually analyze how a plan might cause an economic impact. And that is just completely missing from this. Again, another reason they should probably withdraw this and pull it back, because they're just missing the kinds of things that that are going to lead to lawsuits on this, just because you have to do these steps. They're legally required. And so I don't know why they're moving forward with this one, I think it would be in everyone's best interest that they step back and do it right. That all being said, you go look through like the rest of the stuff in here. And it's like, I was reading the soil section and they use this thing called K factor, but the amount of precipitation in this area doesn't justify their analysis of like the K factor is like how much soil gets lost to erosion. They can't prove that the erosion amount is increasing by the recreation use because it's such loose soil. Like what a rainstorm is going to do is going to be a lot more erosive than what a dirt bike's going to do. You don't have in the heart of the area. I didn't notice a lot of social trails being created because the brush, I went and stepped into the actual brush, like outside of one of these wash bottom trails and said, well, why don't you guys leave the trail and come make a new trail through here? And they just laughed at me. They're like, why would we do that? The nature created like a perfect trail right there. If I go drive through there, it's like bushes with thorns. It's dense, you would just get stuck in the bushes and you'd be spending all your time getting yourself in and out of bushes. And so it's like, it's not like people are going off trail and trying to blaze new trails here. They're sticking to what have been a long time established and used routes. They're because there was such light use, I didn't see any like trash or anything out there that seems like that people are just tearing this place up and leaving it worse than they found it. I didn't see a lot of like recreational shooting. Like there just wasn't any of that going on out here. I'm not saying that it doesn't. I just didn't see. Sometimes those are like the big eyesores where people have trashed a place. There wasn't any of that. So what were you going to say, Simone?
I don't remember now.
You don't remember. I stole your train of thought. Another thing is like you look, I feel like this, the analysis is very boilerplate from them as I've read through the plan. And so for instance, they cite a study about that roads can impact sensitive species and wildlife. And they cite this study from 1996. And that's another problem with this. A lot of the science in here is very outdated. Things from like the 80s and the 90s.
Outdated.
And I mean, and so it's like the studies themselves would be artifacts protected under the Archaeological Resource Protection Act. If we were to encounter one of them out on the landscape from its original publication date. And so the studies are ancient and they say something like, if you have a certain number of road density in an area, then that causes an impact to large mammals and wildlife. And then you go look up the study and it's a study on paved roads and highways, not single track desert trails.
Totally not applicable to this area.
And so it's just, I've said this before, like I used to teach technical writing and a lot of the work I see come out of agencies like the Bureau of Land Management, I'd give it like C-, C+. Like it's not great analysis. It's not very thoroughly cited or referenced. They rely on dated and irrelevant sources. And it almost just feels like they're checking off the boxes to make a power move, not to make an informed decision, which is the big lie of the administrative state. Is that they say, well, government has become so complicated in the modern era, and so we need bureaucracies of experts to do all these complicated policies and plans and management of government policy. So that's where you get all these agencies exploding through the 20th century. And it's all built on the premise of expertise should rule. And if we can come up with, if we can understand something with a deep expertise, then that will lead to good government. And then you always, and then you go lift up the hood of what they produce, these bureaucracies and their expertise. And there's really not a whole lot there. And so, and this is all the argument for saying, well, Congress shouldn't do this. We, the experts, should have all the power. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, I don't think anyone in Idaho's delegation would vote for any one of these alternatives and vote for that and stake their political career on it.
Involved to get us an extension on the comment period.
Yeah, well, and if the environmental concerns are so bad, then the environmental movement is powerful politically. They could get them unelected. Environmental concerns that are going to make the nightly news out there that are going to be a political risk to anybody. And so if this was just something elected people voted on, they wouldn't vote to close a single mile of these routes. And so instead, we defer to the experts who then pull up some study from like 1972 and say, well, this study about these soils in a completely different area and a completely different ecosystem, like completely different geology, tells us this broadly applicable thing that means nothing to this specific plan. But hey, we like threw the information together and put it out for public comment, and we're going to make a decision now. I mean, this isn't actual expertise. It's fake. It's counterfeit. Sorry, you were asking me a question.
So I've been asked a lot with this plan, like, why are they even doing that? Why can't they just leave us alone? Like, why are we going through travel management planning? Like, why do they even have to look at the routes? Why do they have to decide what's open and closed? Why can't we just leave things how it is? Why can't they just leave us alone? And then why are they trying to close so much that's going to restrict so much of our access? Do you think this is coming from higher up, that the local BLM field office is being told, hey, you need to close some things. We need to see a reduction in route density and mileage.
That's a good question. And usually my answer is like, yes, absolutely to that. But this area has kind of been unique because we've had four other plans run by essentially the same group of people, the same upper management. And every one of these plans has some problems with it. We're currently appealing two of them that have been completed, the Birds of Prey NCA plan and the Canyonlands West plan. But in those appeals, I still am getting a sense that the agency, the appeals board, everybody's being kind of reasonable about the concerns we're raising. And in a general sense, most of these plans haven't closed extraordinary amounts of routes. I know most folks that are members of BRC and our supporters, they don't want to see a single mile closed, and we try to fight for that as hard as we can. But compared to what we're seeing in like Utah and Arizona and elsewhere, I mean, most of the plans in this area haven't been closing as many trails as other offices have been.
Yeah, I was shocked when this one first came out because I was expecting it to be very similar to the other ones
or to at least have one alternative
that was decent, that didn't close very much, that only closed, you know, like the other one closed like 23 miles of routes. You know, I didn't expect to see hundreds of miles of closures.
Yeah. And so it was kind of like three bad options on this one. And so it did ask me to ask the same question, and they are the BLM on these areas. They are required by an act of Congress to complete these specific plans by like 2012, and they didn't get it done. I mean, the statute, the Omnibus Public Lands Act of 2009, basically said you have to do travel planning for the Owyhees by 2012. And that's why they did all the inventory work back then. They worked on this. It got delayed. And by the latter end of the Obama administration, they were trying to get them done, but it just got so much. Same problems we're running into now. A lot of resistance, a lot of congressional oversight and involvement, where they realized these plans weren't being done well or in a way that serve the users in this area.
And that's another question that I've gotten a lot is, well, if they didn't complete it by 2012, why are they doing it now? Like, can't they just stop?
I've seen that question. I don't know. I mean, the BLM would probably say, nah, I mean, they could be sued by somebody to say, hey, these aren't done by 2012, so you need to get them done. And they would get a settlement from a judge of some kind to give, kind of like what we're seeing in Utah with our settlement with SUA, where we have like a certain timeline to get travel plans done. And so it's not like a judge would look and say, oh, you missed your deadline, so no more management here. They would say, okay, you missed your deadline, so we're now prescribing you a new deadline and it'll be court ordered. And so that's where they could, and that might be why they're just trying to get these done, is they don't want to run into that problem. And I sympathize with that on some level. I mean, I think we're not opposed to helping them get these plans done as long as they're done well with good information from the community and that they meet the needs. And I don't think it's impossible for them to do that. I think they've shown this office isn't just, I don't think they're being directed by the higher ups to just shut down a lot of stuff. except for this planet. Like, this Grandview one makes me wonder why. And so then another thing others are talking about is, if you and I, we've talked about the solar plant, like the update to the solar development on BLM lands. They're now looking at including Idaho into having a fast track process for solar farm development. And so you have maps out there of, like, these are the areas in Idaho where we could do some solar farm installations. And this area in Grandview and on the Owyhee front probably meets those criteria. It does. I mean, on several of the maps of their overlays of, like, here's where we think we might build solar things with this new plan, this area is on that map. And so because the BLM doesn't connect those dots, they don't analyze how this plan would affect alternative energy development in the EA. That means we in the public have to just connect those dots. And it's a very commonly connected dot. When I look at that overlay of the solar plan development proposals, a lot of them are in areas like this, that the only people out there really are the OHV users and maybe some cattle ranchers. And it's not too steep of terrain, because it's the sort of the lowlands on the front of the mountain range. It is a desert. It is open space, open country. It's what makes it attractive for off-roading and dirt biking. And it's close to Boise. It's close to hot freeways and highways. So I don't know where all the transmission lines are out there. I didn't notice any off the top of my head in memory, but I know there's some planned ones because they want to build wind farms in Idaho and transport all that power to, like, California or wherever else. And so that could be another dimension to this. We're telling people you might as well take that seriously, because the plans are out there. That solar plan is open for public comment till April 18th. This plan's open till April 15th. They are things being done in coordination with each other and that will impact each other. And so if there's, like, this conspiracy that there's, like, the top levels of the Biden administration are telling this field office in Boise, we want that area shut down because we have, like, solar farm interest in that area and we want to make that available to them. The one thing that doesn't pan out with that is they do still leave enough routes there. Like, they're not completely closing everything, like, in a whole block. Like, there are still some routes going through the area.
The Western solar plan would prioritize areas that are previously disturbed, and so it would still close that it could be, like, wilderness. But it would leave enough open that then they could say, oh, we're going to put a solar farm here.
So that's what would happen is, like, what I just said is there's, like, still some routes there. And I could see somebody be like, see, you said there's still, I'm like, no, that's not the route system we want. We want the route system that's there. But they could launder out half the routes and then have the solar farm developers come in and say, well, this is the best site for this, the installation.
And because there's not desert racing anymore, because they just... decimated.
Yeah, then, like, so we'll just close the routes in this area.
Yeah.
And so it might be like this death by a handful of cuts, not a thousand, but a few big hacks off of the appendages. And so I don't know. I don't trust them. I think that the alternative energy people have a lot of clout in the agency right now, along with the wilderness preservation crowd. And so I think those pressures do exist. I don't think that these managers operate in a vacuum. I do believe this is one of those where if the local managers could just decide how they want to do it, they'd just leave it open and let the public keep using it as they are. But they are under these other pressures from the law and from other to get something done. And so I think our role we want to play is, if something is going to have to get done, let's make sure it's the right thing and that it's good and that we're not inadvertently hurting a bunch of users that aren't really causing much harm. And that's the path they are going down. And so we got an extension on this, Simone. What's the deadline?
April 15th. Get your comments in. If you're using our action alert, make sure if you are editing it and putting in your own, you know, experiences, your own thoughts on this, put it at the beginning of the pre-written text rather than in the middle or at the end or whatever. It is best to put it at the beginning, just a side note.
Yeah, and we encourage everyone to do that, especially if you've used this area. They need a lot of firsthand experience from the users, and we need to make sure their records show that a lot of people care about this area. So we'll have the link to do that in the show notes. We'll have the link for the solar plan as well, because if you're commenting on this, the Grandview plan, you might as well go add your voice to the solar plan. And I think that is enough of a conversation starter for the Grandview plan. There's a lot of work still to do, and so help us share this episode, and we'll be getting the word out.